Imagine, like, hauling an entire fleet of wooden ships, piece by piece, over a 10,000-foot mountain range.
Just to reach an ocean you've only heard rumors about.
Right, it sounds like an action movie. But that was the actual gritty reality of the Spanish conquest. You know, we're usually taught that in 1521, Hernan Cortez and a few hundred guys just toppled the Aztec Empire.
Yeah, the classic textbook version.
Exactly. But our exploration into the source material today, this book, Conquistas, Actores, Escenarios y Reflexiones, edited by Martin Rios Aloma, well, it tells a much wilder, more global story.
It really does. It's fascinating because we usually treat the conquest like it happened in a total vacuum.
Right, like an isolated event.
But in reality, it was the climax of the Reconquista. I mean, that was a 700-year campaign where Christian kingdoms in Spain fought to retake the peninsula from Muslim rule.
So when Granada fell in 1492, that energy didn't just stop.
Exactly. It jumped the Atlantic. The Spaniards weren't just looking for gold. They were, obsessed with finding a shortcut to the spicery in Asia.
To bypass the trade monopolies in the Mediterranean, right?
Yeah, that was the real driving force.
Hey, so if we look at it that way, Mexico was essentially like a massive geographical speed bump on their way to the Asian markets.
That's a really great way to put it.
It's like a high-stakes corporate expansion into an emerging market, and they hit an unexpected obstacle and just had to pivot. But if the goal was trade, why the massive military takeover?
Well, because they realized they couldn't just sail through, they had to secure the area. And this is where the whole myth of the 500 brave Spaniards totally falls apart.
Oh, definitely.
Because to secure the Altino, the high central plateau where the Aztec power base was, they needed a ton of help.
Right.
It was actually an Indo-Hispanic army.
I mean, the numbers in the source are crazy. For every one Spaniard, there were, what, under 200 indigenous allies?
Yes, exactly. Groups like the Tlaxcalans.
Hold on, 200 to 1. If the indigenous soldiers were the overwhelming majority, why do we even call it a Spanish conquest at all?
Well, that's the big question the book raises.
Yeah, it sounds way more like a Mesoamerican civil war, where the Spaniards were just like wild card consultants who happened to have steel swords.
That's exactly how the sources frame it. These indigenous groups weren't just vanquished victims being led around, they were savvy political actors.
Making strategic alliances.
Right. They saw the Spaniards as a disruptive technology. It was a way to settle their own local rivalries. The Tlaxcalans weren't helping Cortez out of the goodness of their hearts. They were using him to dismantle their rivals.
Okay, so they take the Altiplano, but then, instead of chilling out and enjoying the victory, they immediately start dragging those ship parts over mountains toward the Pacific.
The Mar del Sur, yes.
Like, why keep pushing? If I just helped overthrow an empire, I'd want to take a breather.
Well, there was no breathing room. The momentum of that massive Indo-Hispanic army required constant new rewards. And the crown was still obsessed with the secret of the strait.
That mythical water passage to connect the oceans.
Right. They were so desperate to reach Asia that they built ships in Zacatula and Tehuantepec, right in the middle of a conflict zone.
And the logistics sound like a total nightmare. You've got the Thames, right? The indigenous carrier.
Yes, because there were no roads or draft animals yet.
So every nail, anchor, and plank had to be carried on a human back over the Sierras. It's a massive logistical bottleneck. I mean, they were completely dependent on indigenous labor just to move a single mile.
Precisely. And this diversity of actors goes way beyond just the soldiers or carriers. You have women like Malitzin acting as this essential bridge between worlds.
And rival empires, too, like the Purépecha.
Yeah, they resisted with their own unique culture, building those circular rectangular pyramids they called yacatas.
It really makes the 1521 end date we learned in school feel totally arbitrary.
Because it is. The conquest didn't just end with the fall of the Aztecs, it was this grinding 180-year struggle.
Wow. 180 years.
Yeah, I mean, the last Maya city, Tayasal, didn't actually fall until 1698.
Let that sink in for a second. That is mind-blowing.
It completely shifts the timeline.
Yeah, because the famous scholar, Sor Juana Inés de la Cruz, lived her entire life, wrote her greatest works, and died in 1695. That's 3 years before the conquest was technically even finished.
It really flips your perspective on the colonial era. I mean, if the map was still being violently redrawn nearly 2 centuries after Cortés arrived, how stable was that society, really?
Exactly. It leaves you wondering, if a conquest takes 180 years to finish, at what point does the war actually end and the country begin?
That's a great point.
Or are we, still living in the ripples of those strategic alliances today? Just something to think about next time you see a simple map of the Spanish Empire. Thanks for joining us for this exploration into the source material, everyone.